Hi, I'm David Walker and welcome to the Brain Tumor Podcast. If you haven't listened to one of these podcasts before, the aim is to educate and inform. It's to provide much needed information for those wishing to find out more about brain tumors. Please, if you like the show, leave us a good rating. In that way, more people get to hear about us and therefore more people will be potentially helped by the information in the podcast. Now, on to today's episode. Hi, this is David Walker with another episode of the Brain Tumor Podcast. Again, I really thank you for your support so far throughout the series. It's been really encouraging. Today I want to talk about hydrocephalus and shunts as they relate to brain tumors in particular. I'm going to talk about what hydrocephalus is, give an overview of the flow of the CSF and the ventricular system, what a shunt is and what the different types of shunts there are, and why a brain tumor might cause hydrocephalus, and what strategies we use as surgeons to deal with hydrocephalus. I'm going to touch on ongoing follow-up and also what complications can arise from a shunt procedure or having a shunt in situ. So what is hydrocephalus? Well, let me first start by just describing what the normal CSF and ventricular system is. Now, CSF is brain and spine fluid, cerebrospinal fluid, technically. It's manufactured in the ventricular system, the lateral ventricles and the fourth ventricle within the brain. The ventricles are fluid, CSF-filled cavities within the brain. The CSF circulates through those ventricles and comes out at the base of the brain, circulates up around the brain itself and down into around the spinal cord. And there is approximately 150 mils of CSF in an adult at any one time. 75 mils within the cranial cavity and 75 mils in the spinal cavity. That CSF actually turns over 3 times a day. So CSF is manufactured, approximately 450 mils of CSF is made every day. So it's really interesting. So it's a positive mechanism. It's an active process of production and absorption and flow. CSF provides a number of complex functions, and we don't really fully understand all of it, but certainly there's a physical function where it supports and allows the brain and spinal cord to float within the spinal, with the cranial cavity and the spinal canal. But it also primarily is a waste system, and also a system where the brain cells can function in an appropriate chemical environment. So hydrocephalus occurs when there's a buildup of CSF within the brain. Literally, it means water on the brain. CSF is primarily built up because there's a lack of absorption, either at the where the CSF is absorbed, which is at the top of the skull along the big veins that go along the top of the skull. Technically, if you're interested, it's the arachnoid villi, which feed into then the CSF being absorbed into the superior sagittal sinus primarily. So a build-up of CSF and the resultant hydrocephalus can occur when there's a lack of absorption or a blockage in the flow. So that's basically what hydrocephalus is. So hydrocephalus can be classified as a communicating hydrocephalus, where there's basically a lack of absorption of the CSF, or an obstructive hydrocephalus, when there's a blockage of flow within the ventricular system. Well, what is a shunt? Well, a shunt is basically a device, a tube, that bypasses the obstruction, that allows CSF to flow external to the normal pathways, either outside the brain, as in the case of a temporary shunt, that's referred to as an external ventricular drain, or EVD, or permanent implanted shunts, most commonly ventriculoperitoneal shunt. Now that is a tube that's placed into the usually the lateral ventricle of the brain, and that via a one-way valve under the skin in the head area, connected to another tube that goes under the skin into the peritoneum or the abdominal cavity. So a ventriculoperitoneal or VP shunt. Much less commonly, a ventriculoatrial shunt, where the distal tubing is, rather than going into the abdominal cavity, actually passes into the heart directly via the large vein in the neck, the jugular vein. So the types of shunts are either temporary or permanent, and a temporary one's an external ventricular drain, sometimes a spinal drain, but less commonly when dealing with brain tumours. Permanent shunts, most commonly a ventriculoperitoneal or VP shunt, much less commonly ventriculoatrial, and very rarely other types of shunts like ventriculopleural shunts. There is another way of dealing with hydrocephalus, and dealing with particularly an obstructive hydrocephalus, and that is a procedure called a third ventriculostomy, usually done endoscopically, where a bypass can be made without putting a tube in through the base of the skull, through the bottom of the third ventricle, to the basal cisterns, which are the spaces of CSF-filled spaces at the base of the brain. And that can be very useful when the obstruction of CSF flow is out of the third ventricle or out of the fourth ventricle. Okay, so just to recap, CSF is made in the lateral and fourth ventricles. CSF passes through the lateral to the third, to the fourth ventricles, and out the base of the brain to be absorbed. Hydrocephalus is when there's a lack of absorption of or flow of CSF, and a build-up of CSF pressure. Well, why does a brain tumour cause hydrocephalus? Well, primarily it's due to obstruction. And that can be directly because of the tumour itself is causing a blockage of the normal CSF flow channels, or because it's causing pressure effects and then squashing the normal flow of CSF. Now, for example, in the cerebellum, the posterior fossa, if a tumour is in the fourth ventricle itself, it can cause direct obstruction and a build-up of pressure proximal to that, and therefore obstructive hydrocephalus. Or a tumour, such as a metastatic tumour in the cerebellum, can cause swelling in the cerebellum, and that then can cause indirect blockage of the fourth ventricle and obstructive hydrocephalus. A tumour in the third or lateral ventricles can also cause obstructive hydrocephalus. So intraventricular tumours growing in those third or lateral ventricles can cause, again, also obstructive hydrocephalus. It can be localised to that particular ventricle, such as a unilateral lateral ventricular dilatation hydrocephalus, or temporal horn obstruction of the lateral ventricle. These may all seem confusing, but once you get a handle of the anatomy of the ventricular system, it's very simple. Or there can be a generalized hydrocephalus occur because of the obstruction of the CSF pathways. Brain tumors can also cause communicating hydrocephalus. For instance, a brain tumor, or either before or after surgery, can cause a blockage through sediment or blood or even infection in the CSF absorption. And that can lead to communicating hydrocephalus. Okay, so we've got obstructive and communicating hydrocephalus. Usually obstructive hydrocephalus is the problem with a brain tumour. How do we deal with hydrocephalus when a patient with a brain tumour has that problem? It may be very important that we deal with the hydrocephalus urgently before dealing with the brain tumour. So we may have to consider, and this is particularly the case in children or other patients with posterior fossa tumours causing obstructive hydrocephalus, we may have to consider doing an external ventricular drain. So that's a very simple procedure where we pass a tube in through the frontal area of the skull and into the ventricular system, and that allows the CSF to flow and the intracranial pressure to normalise. Another way of dealing with that is to do an endoscopic third ventriculostomy. I mentioned that before, where we actually pass an endoscope down through the ventricular system into the base of the brain and allow and make a hole in the base of the brain and allow the CSF to flow that way. An external ventricular drain is by definition a temporising procedure, but it may be all that's required to deal with the hydrocephalus before dealing with the brain tumour. Occasionally, we consider putting in a ventriculoperitoneal shunt straight away, that is a permanent shunt before dealing with the brain tumour itself causing the problem. But the best way of dealing with hydrocephalus, if it can be done, and the hydrocephalus doesn't require itself to be urgently treated, is actually to remove the brain tumour. And if that can be done in a timely fashion, then sometimes we don't have to deal with the hydrocephalus directly, but by removing the tumour, the hydrocephalus itself is relieved. Occasionally, we consider doing procedures such as ventriculostomies or EVDs or even VP shunts at the time, the same operation, the same anaesthetic as dealing with the brain tumour. The same indications would hold. Occasionally, we run into complications or a person develops hydrocephalus after resection of a brain tumour, and then the hydrocephalus has to be dealt with one of the above mechanisms such as a EVT, or probably more commonly in that situation, placement of a permanent VP shunt. So shunts, if they stay in, ventricular VP shunts, do need to be followed up in their own right, because they can run into complications over time. So it's important that the surgeon does follow up patients with VP shunts, not just because of the tumour, for tumour follow-up, no matter what the brain tumour is ultimately, but the shunt itself does need to be followed up and checked on. Occasionally we use shunts that are programmable, so that the valve itself, a one-way valve is used, that the settings in that valve can be altered, and they can be altered inadvertently by MRI machines, so that may be another factor that needs to be dealt with. And shunts also can run into complications, as I said. They can be blocked over time with debris, or the choroid plexus itself can grow into the ventricular catheter and block them up. Or patients with shunts cannot get other issues such as infection or abdominal problems, and shortly after being placed, a VP shunt or ventricular drain even can cause intraventricular bleeding. So there's a number of complications that shunts can occur, can result in. So I've covered today what hydrocephalus is. I talked about the normal CSF flow, how it's made and how it circulates. I've talked about shunts. I may not have covered actually what a shunt looks like. Basically, a shunt is has three components. It has a ventricular catheter, which is they're all made of silicon. That is about 3 millimetres or so in diameter. It gets passed into the ventricular system. That's then connected directly or indirectly to a one-way valve that allows the CSF to flow more distally, and that one-way valve is connected to a peritoneal catheter, again made of silicon, the same diameter, 3 millimetres or so in diameter externally, and then that passes down into the abdominal cavity most commonly. So I talked about what shunts are. I talked about how brain tumours can cause hydrocephalus and how hydrocephalus may have to be dealt with by the surgeon either before, during or after a brain tumour operation. And I talked about briefly the complications and the requirement for follow-up for shunts. Thanks for listening and have a great day. The information in this podcast is general in nature and it's not a substitute for the medical advice that you get from your own doctors. I'm not able to provide specific information or advice relating to your condition or anyone's individual condition in this podcast. But if you do have suggestions or feedback, please let me know and send me an email at professordavidwalker@brisbane.com.au. That's all small case, professordavidwalker@brisbane.com.au. Thanks very much. Have a great day.